Welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. This series will question the assumption that people are psychologically broken and need to be fixed. We will talk about how seeing people as innately healthy will change all of your interactions and outcomes. This is a true paradigm shift, and it simplifies the entire process of dealing with mental distress and allows for more profound and immediate changes.
Aloha, and welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. I'm Christine Heath, coming to you from Hawaii, and I'm here with the gorgeous and wonderfully talented, great storyteller friend of mine, and her name is
Judy Sedgman, and I'm here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I can't speak too highly about the weather today, but I can speak highly about Chris, my dear friend, and probably one of the best counselors I've ever seen work. So I have to tell you that. I would send her anybody in the world.
Well, we have a mutual admiration society, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So today, I guess we're going to talk about going back into the memory library, because we've been working with several people who have had really bad past experiences, certifiable. It was hell what they went through in their families and then afterwards in the mental health system. And one of the things that we saw in them, but it's also true for just about anybody, is that we get lost in our memories of things that happened to us. And then we get affected by it and we get into a lower mood. Well, it's very interesting because Sid Banks's new video, which is called The Insight, for any of you that haven't seen it, please go to his YouTube channel, Sydney Banks 3 on YouTube, or to sidbanks.com or to 3pgc.org. And he really talks about the power of thought in the past to create the suffering that you're in the present. In a beautiful way, in a very touching way, in a very deep way, he helps us to remember that when you're caught up going through the past, it's kind of like going through the junk drawer in your kitchen, and you keep going through it and going through it because you're sure the answer is there. Like, you're sure that what you're looking for is going to be in that drawer. So you look and you look, can't find it. So you shut the drawer up, you walk away and you look other places, and then you come back because you know it's in that drawer, and you keep going through it. You keep going through your past over and over and over, the things that happened to you. Like, life happens in different ways. We live at different levels of consciousness. We interact with people at different levels of consciousness. These things happen to us, but they're not our fault. They're the fault of the way life falls into place around us. Okay, and so when you're trying to figure out what you can do about what happened with somebody else, you're like way out of your ballpark, because that's just not where the answer is going to be. And the more you think about the awful things that people that were suffering and in a really bad state of mind did to you, the more real it is, the more hurt you feel, the more insecure you feel, the more unloved you feel, the more special you feel that these awful things happen to you. But those thoughts, when you've been trained, especially in the traditional psychology world, to value them, to go through them, to talk about them, to share them, to try to change how you think about them, all of that is so prominent in the field that people who already are doing it because they're caught in traumatic thoughts from their past now are taught to do even more of that. So it feels like there's no way out. And of course, it creates hopelessness and helplessness. And then you want to kill yourself because, really, if the way you are right now is because of what happened in your past, you're screwed. because you cannot change your past. Okay, so you have to start to wake up to thoughts that are just memories. And every time those memories come to life and they cause you suffering, you need to come back into the present moment and get your mind to stop focusing on that. Stop thinking about it. You might need to bring yourself back and say, oh, look at the scratches on the window. Oh, my dogs have been really barking at the window. I've got to clean that. Now, that sounds silly, but that's really it. You've got to be focused on what's real, which is now, not the past. But once you go, once you open the door, it would seem to me like when I did traditional work and I did a lot of time traveling, I'd go into people's past all the time. It was like we'd walk down the hall and open the door and go into the past, like it was a place to go. And that's what happens with those memories when you get caught up in them, is that it feels like there's something that needs to be addressed. There's something that needs to be gone over, that you're going to get some value out of it. But that's an illusion. That's an illusion that keeps you thinking about things that you want to get off your mind. Now, the deal is, people say to me sometimes, well, Chris, if I just ignore that, that's what you want me to do, is just pretend that it didn't happen. And that's not it. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is that happened to you. Now, try not to spend any more time thinking about that, because you're not going to find health from thinking about trauma. You know, like once you're healthy, you may look back at that and see it in a different way. But when you're in the middle of it, you can't see it. Your thoughts get too real. And then you start thinking you're hopeless, and then you start thinking that you are damaged and there's something wrong with your brain, that it keeps thinking like this. I don't know how many times we've heard that this in the last month. But my brain is doing this. My brain is thinking that. My brain is thinking this. No, it's you. It's just you having a thought. And you know, all of your thoughts are a bit like Siri. A lot of times they're absolutely right, but they're not always right. And if they create a bad feeling in you, that's this ingenious system that life has created in us, that when we think thoughts that aren't healthy for us, or that aren't accurate, or that aren't good for us, we get a feeling, a bad feeling, a little alert. Ding, 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 ding. Don't continue on this line of thought. You will feel worse. But usually that's when we jump in to that, to the past, and go over stuff and think about it again.
You know, Chris, as you were talking, it reminded me of years ago, long before I ever got involved in the principles, when I was a feature writer for a newspaper. I did a story about a girl who was on this sort of high school speaker circuit, and she came to the community where I was working, and the high school, somebody from the high school called me up and said, I'm sure there's a story here, you should come. So I went to the assembly. And her story was, I don't want to go into great detail, but she was a nursing student, and she was living on the east coast of Florida, and she had to drive through some parts of the Everglades to get to the school she was going to from where she lived. So she went through like dark, nighttime dark sugarcane fields for a few miles before she could get off that and back onto the populous highway. So coming back from class one night, her car broke down. And she pulls over to the side of the road, and she tied a white handkerchief to her antenna and locked herself in her car and waited in the car, fully expecting some nice motorist would come along. And sure enough, this guy came along in a truck, and he came to the window, and she recognized him from high school. He's somebody that she'd gone to high school. She didn't know him well, but she knew she'd gone to high school with him. And she thought, oh, good. You know, here's somebody I went to high school with. So she opens the door and she gets out and she tells the guy the car's broken down and everything. He said, well, I don't know enough about fixing cars, you know, but if you get in my truck, I'll just take you, you know, to your home. And then you can leave the car here, lock it up, and somebody can come deal with it tomorrow. So she said, okay, because again, she knew this guy from high school and he remembered her, you know. She said, oh, weren't you, and blah, blah, blah. And yes, you know, that's how we met. But she didn't really know him. She gets in his truck, and he turns off into a dark, ditchy road. Right. And he takes her to this farmhouse, which was completely abandoned. And he keeps her there for 3 days, during which time he did unspeakable things to her constantly, including defacing her face. She had been a cheerleader in high school, so he cut her face so that she would never look beautiful again. And nipped off part of one of her ears. I mean, it was just awful, the things. There were sexual things and all. It was just so bad. And then she was, like, passed out, and he put her back in the truck, and he took her back to the car and dumped her by her car on the side of the road and drove away. And she, a motorist, a nice elderly couple came along moments later, and they called the cops and the ambulance, and she was barely alive, but she made it. So she got well. She got, you know, her face never, you know, recovered. It's all scarred, but she recovered from everything else except for the fact that she was in a wheelchair because he had broken both her legs and they couldn't fix them. But anyway, so she's in a wheelchair, but she's on the speaker circuit. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, because I'd read the little brochure and I'm thinking, like, I don't know what I got myself into here. She was one of the most positive, upbeat speakers you could imagine. And she told her story very surface, you know, just to let him know what happened. She wasn't going to scare the living bejesus out of him. But then somebody in the audience at the end raised their hand and said, well, I don't understand you. I mean, aren't you just furious at him? Don't you just hate him? Don't you want to kill him? Haven't you, you know, had him tracked down and sent to jail? And what are you talking about him like? He just came in and out of your life and look what he did to you. And she listened to this homeless girl, just drama, you know, pouring out of every pore. And she said, you know what? She said, this is what I learned from that experience. I gave him 3.5 days of my life. I didn't have a choice about that. But when those 3.5 days were over and I was in that ambulance, I thought, that's all he gets. I'm done. And I'm not giving him another second of my beautiful, precious life. And I'm here to tell you all, no matter what happens to you, that's the purpose of my talk. It's not to make you feel sorry for me, but to let you know that no matter what happens to you, when it's over, it's up to you where it lives in your heart and mind. And, I mean, kids were weeping.
Oh, that's beautiful, yeah.
It was a beautiful story. Now, I wrote the story, you know, very fully, and I turned it in, and nobody, my editors wouldn't run it because they couldn't believe it.
Oh, no.
They said, she's got to be acting. That can't be true. And that goes to show you how attached we are in our, the way the world is today, to thinking that if something really, really terrible happened to you, you can't get over it. You know, that's just out there. And I think a lot of the people that I work with believe that because they've been told it again and again by therapists, by other people, by well-meaning friends, by parents. And so they think that, well, this is it now for me. It's like, I've had a client recently who said to me, I don't think I'll ever be happy again. You know, I mean, she's young. Like, why wouldn't you want to be happy again? But I honestly, my heart goes out to these people and to everybody, because without the understanding of how powerful thought is, and without knowing that getting caught in the content of horrible thought is going to give you 100% of the time a really horrible experience of suffering. But recognizing the feeling of going down, of oh no, I don't want to feel bad, and staying away from the content of that horrible thought, gives you every opportunity in the world to change, to come back out of it, to come back into the present. The deeper we go into the memory file, we talk about it as getting lost in the memory library, because it's innocent, honestly, because the only thing our personal mind has to work with is what it already knows. And so it can't give you an answer to something that it doesn't know anything about.
And it doesn't have an intelligence of its own.
No.
You're not thinking those things because there's some greater good or some health benefit to you. It's just, you have to look at your own memory as like it's a Alexa or a Siri. It's just artificial intelligence. Yeah. And it's programmed in a certain way. You programmed it as you went through life, thinking life is this way, I'm this way, this is the way my life is. Those are the beliefs you formed. And that those don't look like they're thoughts. They look like they're the truth because you've thought them over and over and over again. Right. So, you know, like I had a colleague that we moved to Hawaii together, and she thought that she was mentally retarded. And that's what they used to call it back in the day. And we were talking one day, and she told me, she said, well, you know, I am mentally retarded. And it was like, very funny. And I said, you may not use your common sense much, but you're definitely not mentally retarded. She goes, no, I am. I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, when I was in the fifth grade, I had an IQ test done. Mm-hmm. And I was taken into the school counselor's office. And my mother had to come up to school. And the school counselor told me that I was mentally retarded. And that's how I tested. I was like, okay. And she said, so that's the way it is. And I said to her, I was kind of chuckling, and I said, because I knew that her mother had been an alcoholic and she had been sexually abused by men that were her mother's boyfriends, and she had gone through a really hard time as a kid. And so I said to her, I said, like, okay, now, how many people do you know that have been told that they have this learning intelligence issue that graduate with a 3.5 from high school? She said, no, I don't know. I said, okay, and of those people, how many of them go on to have a 4.0 in college? She said, I don't know. And how many of them get into a master's degree program and get a master's degree in psychology? She stops for a minute. She goes, you mean I'm not mentally retarded? I said, no, hello. I said, you were probably really distressed at the time, didn't want to take the test or something. And so you answered the questions due to the state of mind you were in at the time. And she goes, oh my God, all this time I thought I was. And I was like, no wonder she's so ditzy. You know, she was like, and it was, but it was funny that all those things could happen in her life, yet she held on to that memory. Mm-hmm. And that memory looked real to her in spite of everything. And that's kind of the deal. It's like you have to, you know, people say, I know everybody tells me this, but I think this, right? Or this always happens to me, or this is the way I am. Those are just thoughts you have that you've formed in your past. But you're not stuck with any of that. Mm-hmm. You have to see that that's just thought. I mean, one of the things that what we see with people is that people start thinking about things, and it's granted they're thinking very fast. Their mind is, you know, like Sid talks about in Second Chance, about how when you do too much thinking in general, you kind of blow a fuse and your brain kind of flips out. He uses better words than that, but that's kind of what he was saying. And so I said, well, it's true that you think way too much all the time. You're in memory all the time. And so when you have a low mood or you get going too fast, you like a circuit breaks, and then your thoughts just kind of blah, 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 and they come fast and furiously, and they all look real to you. And you're like, oh, that. But it's just thought. That's all it is.
Yeah. And also when you see that and you realize the difference between our personal thinking and insights and wisdom in the moment is that insights and wisdom in the moment are present moment information that you need right now that you didn't know until it came to mind. So out of the blue, something says to you, you know, maybe you should do this. And if you listen to it, it always turns out well. And then you think, wow, that was lucky. But your personal mind is the memory library. It only knows what you have told it in the past, what you have stored away. Now, people, you know, I used to talk about the sort of the dead thought aspect of the personal mind and when I was teaching in university, and people would object to it and say, well, you're saying education isn't valuable. And I'm saying, no, education is invaluable if you use it, if you use that knowledge when you need it, not when you don't.
Right.
And so if you're a scientist, you have to remember how to do research. You have to remember which statistical model to use. You have to remember, you know, which chemicals you can't mix together in the lab, mm-hmm. you know, but when you're a human being trying to have a human relationship, you have to remember nothing. You just have to live in the moment and enjoy every moment and see life for what it is right in front of your face.
Right.
And we don't realize that we do that naturally growing up. Kids do that. I mean, you can watch them and you can see them when they're learning something new, their little frown comes up and their little eyes squint and they think about it and they come up with an answer. And they're always glad when that's over. And then you give them a toy and they start making up a whole universe around the toy, completely fresh in the moment. And we're meant to be able to move back and forth like that just easily, just allow our minds to do what they do. But when we get, I personally think a lot of it is ego, like, well, I've had an especially hard life. I mean, nobody's been through what I've been through. And I can tell you that I've talked to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of clients who have been through a lot of terrible things. And every one of them thought nobody could possibly understand how bad their thing was. Mm-hmm. You know, even though there was a huge spread of things. And it's just, that's just the way we are. We'd start defining ourselves. It becomes important to us to be identified with this awful thing because we want sympathy. Mm-hmm. You know, even though that seems almost crass to say that, but the truth is when people are down, they are always thinking that somebody should feel sorry for them and do something for them. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you can't do anything for somebody who's in that state of mind because no matter what you do, they come up with another reason why they're miserable. Mm-hmm. And so we always try to help people to calm down and look away and sit down before we try to talk to them. And, you know, sometimes it gets ugly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, people get very attached
to their,
what the narrative therapist would call their story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the thoughts they put together and what they believe to be true about it and how special that is. And I remember the thing that Sid told me was, he said, just be ordinary, Chris. Just be ordinary. And, you know, I was kind of one of those special people that I thought that, you know, what I had gone through was so special. And then I started being a therapist and half the clients came in and had the same exact thing that they went through. And I was like, boy, there's a lot of people like this. And I was like, oh, hey, that's perhaps what the problem is here. You know, but it took me a while to see that because I thought, oh, my past is way worse than anybody else's or different or, you know, how could I possibly? And then you tell people and they're like, oh my God, they did that. Oh my God. You know, and it's like, now I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I made such a big deal about that because it just caused me to suffer. And it really, my thinking about it was worse than anything that I had to go through. I mean, the truth is my thinking after the fact was worse than that the experience. Like I was more scared after I got assaulted than I was while I was being assaulted. You know, because it was fear then. It was different than, oh man, what am I going to do to survive this? You know, it's a worse feeling in my mind anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's kind of the deal is that those thoughts come lurking in and they still do for me. Sometimes I'll be like home alone. And I'm like, is there somebody in the kitchen? You know, and I'm like, oh, for God's sake, your dogs are right here. They would be barking their heads off. Oh, yeah. But it seems real when I do that. It seems like I saw a shadow. I saw something. And it's just that our minds play tricks on us and we get ourselves freaked out. But if you know that's what's going on, you don't suffer from it. And eventually it drops away. You know, like I really couldn't even live alone in a house for, I got a condo. First I went to live with my sister, and then I got an apartment with a friend. That's kind of like your apartment. There was only one way in and one way out. So if somebody was going to come in, they had to go through a heavily fortified door, but that's what I had to live in to not let those thoughts trick me. So as I learned about how thought worked, that I would get tricked less and less. Once in a while, I'd still get tricked by it. Mm-hmm. And each time it got less intense and less frequent, like I wouldn't have to get in my car and go drive around. I'd just like take myself by the hand and say, knock it off, or distract myself or something. But, you know, it's like knowing that that's how the past can work when your mood drops, because you have those memories there. You did go through whatever you went through. So you still have those memories yet. But now it's almost like you're bringing them up as a way to validate a state of insecurity that you're in now.
Yeah. Yeah, the difference between now, then, and not yet is profound. Mm-hmm. And realizing that anything that you're thinking about from the past, when you drag it into the present, all you're doing is reliving a dead thought. Mm-hmm. When you're living in the present, you always know what to do. It's mm-hmm. like when you, I thought that was very interesting, Chris, when you brought up, you know, it was easier to go through the thing than to think about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason for that is that in the moment, if something's happening and it's a life or death situation, your wisdom kicks in before you have it. You don't have time to think about it. Mm-hmm. And you just go, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And then wisdom will say, do that. And you do that. Mm-hmm. And then if you survive, you go, oh, well, it worked out all right. But then you start thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And the more you think about it, the more you go, oh my God, I could have been killed. This could have happened. That could have happened. It could have been so much worse.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. And my roommates were all away from her, man. I would make everybody else insecure.
Right.
You know? And so it's just, luckily my sister let me move in with her, and that helped a great deal. But I didn't really get over it till I started learning the principles.
Yeah.
You know, it's just I learned how to live with the fear, live with the anxiety that I was in. And frequently that anxiety would actually like look so real that I was sure that it was right. And then it never was, never. Never again. You know, that doesn't mean that other people don't have things happen over and over again, but for me, it was all about suffering in fear. And that's what we want you to be able to do, is to be happy. And you have to decide, do I want to think about this? I'm the thinker. Do I want to keep thinking about this, or do I want to be happy now? That's a choice you have.
That's right.
Maybe you don't want to do it. That's okay. But yeah, that's a choice.
And it's very freeing to just know that that is your choice. Mm-hmm. Because then when you are suffering, you know you've chosen it and you can do it. Sometimes we want to indulge ourselves and have a good cry, but mm-hmm. you can stop.
That's right.
You know that too.
That's right.
So anyway, we hope this has been helpful, and we will see you next time.
Aloha.
We hope you heard something new and that you will continue to join us to challenge the prevailing thinking about the possibilities for health in everyone. To subscribe to the podcast, visit our website at psychologyhasitbackwards.com.